This week's parsha of Parshat Bo culminates the experience of the plagues that befell the Egyptians, the last three plagues of Arba, of locusts, of Choshech, of darkness, and Amakas Becharos, the death of the firstborn. The parsha, really, the theme of the parsha is the exodus of the Jewish people from Egypt, where we have a detailed description of the laws that the Jewish people had to perform in order to be worthy of the redemption experience, the law of the Paschal Lamb, the Matzah, the Maror, the way it had to be eaten, and the laws connected with Pesach are found in this parsha at length. And then we have really the climax of the parsha as the Jewish people's exodus, Be'etzem Hayom Aseh, they go out of Egypt, and the end of the parsha details some more commandments that are connected to remember the Egyptian experience. For example, the mitzvah of tefillin, the mitzvah of pidyon ha-bechor, the redemption of the firstborn son. I'd like to focus in on one pasuk, one question with two parts to it, and I think with understanding the parsha we can really answer the question that I'd like to deal with today. The first verse in chapter 12, after we have the beginning of the parasha, the warnings about Makas Becharos that's going to happen at midnight, now God, so to speak, turns his attention away from the Egyptians and focuses his attention on the Jews. And he gives the Jews, even before the mitzvos of Korban Pesach, of the Paschal Lamb, he gives the Jews the first mitzvah as a people. You almost feel like there's a drum roll in the background. Here comes the first mitzvah that the Jewish people are given as a community. We've had Bris Milah by Abraham. We've had Kiranasha by Yaakov, the part of the animal we can't eat. We have the mitzvah Puravu to multiply. But the first mitzvah as a people is found, first verse, chapter 12. What would we have expected to be the first mitzvah? What would be some suggestion? As a people, your first mitzvah would be? Suggestions? Puravu. Excellent. To multiply. The first mitzvah as a people would be? Any other suggestions? Shabbat? Right? The existence of God, the being witness to God's creation of the world. Any other suggestions? Sacrifices? The existence of God? Let's start off with Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that God exists. I mean, let's start with the basics here. The first mitzvah. Here goes. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, shall be for you Rosh Chodashim, the beginning of the month. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei HaShana, it shall be for you the first of the months of the year. The first mitzvah that we've gotten as a people is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctifying the new month, sanctifying the moon. We're familiar with this mitzvah. It's when God explained to Moshe and Aaron, this is what he should explain to the people, is that when you see the moon, that little sliver in the sky, when it's just at the beginning of the month, and witnesses will come to a Beis Din, to the high court, and say, this is what we saw, and they'll examine the witnesses, and the court will say, indeed, this is indeed the first day of the month, this is indeed the sign of the new month, and now they're Mekadesh HaChodesh, they sanctify the month, and that becomes the first day of the month, and then the whole month is based on their sanctification. Which means, if they decide that today is the first day of the month, 10 days later will be Yom Kippur, and God will come down and judge us. If today is the first day of the month, 15 days later, God will celebrate with us Sukkot or Pesach, whatever it may be. It was up to us as the Jewish people to sanctify the moon to determine the Jewish calendar. That is the first mitzvah. My question, that's the first mitzvah? What is the symbolism? What is the significance of the fact? It's a very nice mitzvah, it's a very beautiful mitzvah. But what is the deeper significance that this mitzvah, all 613 mitzvahs, this mitzvah was chosen to be the one to lead off the parade, so to speak, of the initiation of the mitzvahs for the Jewish people? There's a second part to this question. We're all familiar with probably the most famous Rashi in Chumash. It's the first one. First verse in the Torah we know is Bereishis bara Elokim et haShemayim v'et haAretz, where God created the heavens and the earth. So Rashi begins off, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak asked, Why does the Torah begin with Reish Yisparah, with God created the world? The Torah should have began off with this mitzvah of Achodesh Atzei Halacha, which on a simple level is asking, why don't we begin with the first mitzvah? So again, my question is really the same question. What was it that really drove Rabbi Yitzchak to ask this question? What is it about this mitzvah of Achodesh Atzei Halacha? This is the first mitzvah, the mitzvah of sanctifying the new moon, that is so important, that's so crucial, that I would have thought that this is how the Torah should have begun and not with the creation of the world. There must be something about this mitzvah that I would even have the havamina, the thought, that this is the way the Torah should begin. There is something very powerful and potent about this mitzvah. Question is, what is it? So I'd like to suggest two answers. Two answers today, very simple. Answer number one is based on the commentary of Rav Ovadia Sforno, a commentator on the Chumash. 1475, 1550 are his dates, and he observes, source 2 in his biblical commentary, that it's no coincidence that this commandment to sanctify time was given at the moment of freedom from Egypt. Slaves have no clear notion of time, since it's not theirs to dispose of. They're told what to do, when to do it. Only free men who have at least limited control over their time can fill it with significant matters and sanctify it. Thus, the concept of freedom and sanctification of time are bound up with each other. This approach is a beautiful approach. Why, asked Rav Ovadia Sforno, was this mitzvah chosen? Because the first mitzvah given to us is a mitzvah on a deeper level saying, congratulations, you're free. What marks a free person? It's the ability to have somewhat control of time to set up your own calendar. If you are a slave, you have none of this ability, and therefore, to really show this initiation into being God's people, this initiation into doing God's commandments, you first have to have the crucial element called time. If you don't have time at your disposal, forget about all the other mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are really dependent on the concept of time. The first mitzvah I'm going to give you is your ability to sanctify time. It's a deep level of saying you are really free people. I'd like to understand this a little bit deeper, what this concept of time is all about. And this is in the writings of Rav Salvechik Zatzal, found in Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1. He notes that a slave, an Eved Kenani, a non-Jew who becomes a slave for a Jew, is really a Jew in training, a potential Jew, and performs mitzvot like a Jew. However, a slave is relieved of the requirement to observe time-related mitzvot. Why? Because, as we've seen, he lacks time consciousness. Everything organic or inorganic exists within the dimension of time. The ebb and flow of time also take their toll of the inorganic world, continually transforming and reshaping. The only creature that it can experience time, that feels its passage and senses its movement, is man. And this is what we call time awareness. And here the Rav develops a very insightful idea, which we're all familiar with, but sometimes we need it spelled out, is that there are three aspects of time. He says there's the aspect of retrospection, anticipation, and appreciation. Retrospection refers to man's ability to re-experience the past, to feel deeply that which is only a memory, and we all have this ability. If we would close our eyes and think about a past experience, we could actually relive that experience as if we're experiencing it now. But that's the ability we have to re-experience the past. We also work with this concept of anticipation, which is a person's projection of visions and aspirations into the future. Indeed, one's present life is regulated in expectation of the fulfillment of these dreams. All of us have anticipation. Otherwise, we wouldn't be moving in the present unless we were moving towards somewhere, towards some goal. And then finally, we have appreciation, which embraces the present as a precious possession, as inherently worthy. And the Rav here notes, very fascinating, that this is really the drama that takes place on the Seder evening. The Seder evening, which is an evening which marks our freedom, which on a deeper level, as we are noting, marks our ability to appreciate time. So we have these elements within the Seder night as well. We have retrospection, where we have the mitzvah saying that every individual needs to see themselves as if they have left Egypt. That's a basic yesod, a basic foundation of the Seder night experience. And that's how we begin the Seder, he notes in source 5, with Avadim Hayinu, we begin with the past. And we end the Seder with anticipation of the future. Nishmat Kol Chai, where all people will praise God. Opening the door for Elijah. Our Seder night marks these elements of time, of retrospection, of reliving the past as if we were slaves. Anticipation when there will be a time where we'll all be redeemed. And clearly, with the arrow is in 5, the third time awareness, that mentions appreciation, which means valuing the present and prizing each moment as a precious gift. Three elements of the Seder night to focus in on the importance of time. The Rav continues in this essay that the Jewish law, halacha, is very time conscious and very time oriented. We have this concept that to be free we need time because halacha, Jewish law, is so focused on time. As he notes in source 6, and we're all familiar with this, if let's say candle lighting is at, or really shkia, sunset's at 5 o'clock, so you know we're supposed to light 18 minutes beforehand, but you have till sundown. So let's say sundown's 5 o'clock. So if I would light Friday night candles at 4:59, it'd still be okay. I light it at 5:01, it's Chilul Shabbos, it's desecration of Shabbos. Well, what happened? It was a minute or two. A minute or two makes a big difference, right? It's a question of 1 minute here, 1 minute there, makes a little difference. I once remember asking a rabbi a question, and I said to him, but it's only a question of 5 minutes. And he said, but 5 minutes makes all the difference. That's how we work in Judaism, that 5 minutes is not just 5 minutes. 5 minutes is the difference between sundown or not sundown, between one day or the other day. If you bench Luv and Esrog during the day, you're fine. When it's already nightfall, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. 5 minutes, here or there, makes all the difference. But the beautiful aspect of Judaism is that it's not only in relationship to halacha, to Jewish law, we have this idea of being time-focused in Jewish thought as well. In the Rav's essay, Kol Dodi Dofek, he notes the famous example of the first two kings of Israel. Shaul HaMelech was confronted with a challenge of destroying all of Amalek. And he didn't meet this challenge. He kept the king alive. He kept some of the sheep alive. The next king of Israel, David HaMelech, was also confronted with a challenge. He had relations with Bathsheba where he shouldn't have. He should have. It's irrelevant to get into the details. Both of them ran into difficulties of not being exact in the way God wanted them to act. Shaul's kingdom was ended. David's kingdom became David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam is around. Mashiach will come from David. What's the difference? They both sinned. They both messed up. The difference is time. When Shaul was confronted with his sin, he drayed around. It's not me. It's the people. They wanted to keep their sheep alive. When David sinned and he was confronted, he said one word, Chatati, I sinned. The difference was both admitted that they did wrong. One took 5 minutes to admit that they did wrong, and one admitted it immediately. It's this aspect of time that made all the difference which kingdom would be around. And that's why on a deeper level, we begin off the Seder with this aspect of Kiddush, which we begin off every Shabbat and every festival. But on Pesach, it takes an added significance as noted in Source 8, the Kiddush on the first Seder cup of wine fulfills the requirement of Kiddush Hayom. It concludes with the words, Mikadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim, who sanctifies Israel and the festive seasons. Time is thereby declared a holy entity, but only a free person can make Kiddush designate a span of time as of special significance. Time exists only for the one who is responsive to its ebb and flow. Answer number one, by giving us a mitzvah of sanctifying time, it's saying on a deeper level, you are free. You have the ability to sanctify time, and that's the statement on a deeper level, how we begin our Seder by saying, time is ours. It's the second level of the significance of this mitzvah that I'd like to spend more time. The second idea is based, many commentators will take a look at Rav Hirsch, this is the abridged Rav Hirsch, in source 9a. The renewal of the moon shall be for you a beginning of renewal. This means your perception of the renewal of the moon shall cause you also to renew yourself. It is through this perception that you are to set your own periods of renewal. And that's why he notes, the emphasis is on HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. The renewal of the moon shall be for you. And he continues by saying in 9b, in the land of Egypt, the land most stubborn paganism. In that land did God call forth the future leaders of the people. Show them the sickle of the moon struggling to emerge from darkness into renewed light and say to them, this is to be the model for your own conduct. Even as the moon renews itself by the law of nature, so you too should renew yourself, but of your own free will. Each time the new moon appears, it shall remind you to effect your own free will renewal. And as I renew you, and you renew yourselves, you shall move like the moon, it's a beautiful description, through the darkened skies of the nation. And wherever you go, proclaim the message of chidush, of renewal, the teaching of God. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, on a deeper level, is not only a question of sanctifying the moon, it's sanctification of self. That we need to go through a period of time of renewal. As the Sfasemis points out in Source 10, is that 30 days establish something regular. That's why, for example, if you haven't seen the Yam HaGadol, the great ocean, in 30 days, or a body of water in 30 days, you can say a blessing for it. Because 30 days already establishes a period of time. We will not allow 30 days to go by without renewing ourselves. Once a month, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, it's a perfect shear for today. Once a month, you need to renew yourself. Just as that moon is in its point of renewal, take that as a sign for self to renew yourself. And this is how the Nesivos Shalom clearly spells out the mitzvah. He says, with the asterisks in 11, HaMitzvah Rishonah Shenitzavu Yisrael, the first mitzvah that the Jews were commanded, Hainu HaDavar HaRishon, which means the first thing that God said to the Jewish people, Shirosh Lakol, first and foremost, Sarich Yehudi Tamid Lichadesh, you always have to be new. And that's why it explains in the Nesivos Shalom, we use a lunar calendar and not a solar calendar. All familiar with the famous expression from Kohelet, Ein Chadash Tachat HaShemesh, there's nothing new under the sun. The sun doesn't change. Everything remains stagnant. It's only the moon that ebbs and flows, that has a different cycle. That's where the Jewish people follow a lunar calendar, because that really represents the Jew as both the nation and as an individual. We need to renew ourselves. Why was this mitzvah chosen on the second level? Because it's a mitzvah calling the people for self-renewal. It's a very beautiful concept. What does that mean? How do we renew ourselves? What is the process of renewal all about? So I'd like to suggest that this concept of self-renewal is found specifically in the mitzvah of sanctifying time, because it is through the use of time properly that we can renew ourselves. And now what I'd like to try to do the rest of the shiur today is to explain how. How are we able to use time for self-renewal? And I think the answer to this question is found in analyzing different aspects of the experience of the Exodus of Egypt and laws that are connected with the Exodus experience. And we will find that this concept of utilizing time properly It's a theme that runs through the parsha. Let's begin the discussion with an essay by Rabbi Tantz in Living Inspired. Rabbi Tantz begins his essay with a very famous question. He explains that there's a well-known idea that the Jewish people in Egypt, source 12, were on the 49th level of impurity and had to be redeemed because had they remained in Egypt any longer, they would have sunk to the 50th level, from which there is no return. The redemption occurred when it did because there would have been no Jewish people to redeem had Hashem delayed at all. We were saved at the last moment possible. The moment just before the Exodus, our existence was critically in the balance. One moment longer and we'd been too late. This is a famous example. That's a famous concept that's explained. We're on the 49th level of impurity. God took us out really quickly because had we stayed even one moment longer, we would have fallen into the abyss of the 50th level of impurity and goodbye, good luck, you would never have seen us again. So here comes the question. Hold on. What was going on at that last moment that God, so to speak, snatched us out of the Egyptian claws and took us out? This was a time when the Jewish people were performing the mitzvah of milah, of circumcision, of the paschal lamb. This was the time that they were eating the matzah and the maror. This is the time, as the Haggadah describes, of gilui shechina, the revelation of godliness. What do you mean, one more minute and they would have fallen into the 50th level of impurity? One more minute they would have been angels. This was the highest level of coming close to God. So what do you mean to say, had we been there one more minute, we would have just fallen into the 50th level? Exact opposite. We were moving out. We were moving out so fast. What's going on here? So explains 13. An approach to this question is found in the deeper sources. There's an idea that one can live in the physical dimensions of space and time and be subject to them, part of them, or one can live within them and yet transcend them. To do this, one must minimize the contact between oneself and the physical elements. In the time dimension, this is known as zrizos zeal in performing mitzvot and service to God. So the Maharal explains that if one moves fast and minimizes the time taken for action, one can overcome the stifling effects of time. Of course, it's always a finite time needed for action. But the point is that spirituality is contradicted by unnecessary expansion of the physical dimensions of space and time. The minimum time needed is not a contradiction to spirituality at all. In fact, zealous action elevates the physical dimension to a spiritual level. But he says, since the spiritual world is above time, we know you can't measure spirituality. It's not like a physical object, which is finite. It has a beginning point and an end point. A spiritual idea by its very nature is something above time. So therefore, explains the Maharal, we can make contact with it by coming as close as possible to it by our own efforts, by shrinking the physical component of our action to the absolute essential minimum. The more we come in contact with time in dealing with the mitzvah, the more it has the effect of becoming stale and losing that spirituality. Put another way, laziness or the slowing down of action, the expanding of the physical dimension, makes us part of those dimensions. Sluggishness is the opposite of spirituality, and laziness is incompatible with spiritual growth. Now that explains why God had to take us out so fast, and that had He not taken us out, we would never have gotten out. Brilliant. He says in 15, the problem with more time in Egypt would not have been the contaminating effects of Egyptian impurity. That danger had long since ceased. No, the problem with more time in Egypt would have been what? More time itself. The redemption had occurred, keheref ayin, in the blink of an eye, because the alacrity is necessary for an event to remain spiritual. Had we left Egypt slowly, naturally, in a relaxed fashion, we would have been a natural people. The Jewish nation was being born then. The moment of birth had to transcend because everything goes after the beginning. We became and remain a spiritual people because our beginning was spiritual. Our moment of formation occupied the absolute minimum of time. And since then, we have lived on the edge of the physical universe, at the edge which interfaces with the transcendent, the divine. The terrible danger of more time in Egypt would have been the time itself. That is the impurity which is meant here. The impurity of a nation destined for spirituality becoming merely physical, merely natural. What does this mean? God had to take us out fast because time is something that represents laziness, that represents something that's antithetical to spirituality. And therefore, when forming us as a nation, when giving us our call of what makes us special as a Jewish people, God is saying to us, you want to know what the concept of Judaism is about? It's the concept of Chiddush, it's the concept of newness. And how do you create newness? It's with the ability to move through time quickly and not let time remain stagnant and not get caught up in the physical, but maintain a level of the spiritual. If that sounds a little bit esoterical, let's come down to the practical, and I think you'll understand what I mean, what he means, in a much more simpler way. This idea is manifested in two other places in the parsha where we see this concept, and I think with this, it will bring it down to the concrete. The first is the difference between chametz and matzah. Chametz is leavened bread, matzah is unleavened bread. What's the difference between chametz and matzah? Time. The ingredients are the exact same ingredients. What happens is, if you leave something over in time, it becomes into leavened bread. If you leave it over a little more, what happens? Right. And becomes what? Depends. Spoiled. Sour, fermented, spoiled. How long can you leave matzah around in your house?
A long time.
That's why we make Erev Chatzeros with matzah, let's say. Because matzah stays around. Bread? Well, you know, if you leave it in your house for a couple of days, it starts getting moldy. It's the same ingredients. One difference. It's a difference of time. And this is what we are saying. If you really want to utilize the spiritual, it has to mean grabbing time, not allowing time to be stagnant. You allow time to be stagnant, it becomes sour. And this is true of our own lives, we know this as well. If we'll just add a parenthetical point before moving on. In life, if we don't take care of things immediately, what generally happens to these things? I have thank you notes that I have to write, that the paper isn't long enough for how many I have to write.
That makes me feel better.
What happens is you mean well, and there are wedding presents that one may owe. You mean well. But what happens is, if you don't get things done immediately, things just seem to slide. To add another parenthesis in this, came across our desk a couple of months ago was a book on how to get organized. And this is something that really interests me. It didn't help much, but the ideas were very good. The first thing that this book said was the following. When a piece of paper comes in front of you, whether it's at work or at mail at home, what you must do is deal with it. If you want to throw it out, throw it out. You want to file it. So that moment, file it. And if you need to respond to it, whether it's a bill or whether it's some correspondence, so respond to it. But don't leave it around. Because if you leave it around, we know what happens. You can't find it when you need it. You don't know what to do with it. This is really what we're dealing with. You want to know what chidush is. You want to know what newness is. It's the ability to utilize time. It's the ability to act with zrizus, with zeal. Because if you don't act with zeal, then it becomes like bread, it becomes spoiled. Where we see that this is really the essence of what Judaism is all about, is what we call, so to speak, a play on words that's found within our rabbis. And there's really no such thing as a play on words. It's much deeper than that in this week's parasha, source 19. This is the secret of the statement of the sages. Mitzvah haba liyatcha al tachmitzena. When a mitzvah comes to your hand, do not let it become stale. Literally, do not let it become chametz, sour. And we also have in this week's parasha, ushmartem et hamatzos, and guard the matzos. Make sure they don't become into leavened bread. which can be read Ushmartem with a different vocalization, et ha-mitzvos, guard the mitzvos. No mere play on words. The idea here is just as matzah becomes chametz if left too long, so too a mitzvah, spiritual life, for the one who performs it becomes chametz, fermented, sour, if it's allowed to become part of the natural. A mitzvah is a physical action containing unbounded spiritual energies, but that's how it should be performed. If it is performed as no more than a physical action, it may lose its connection with the spiritual world. Mitzvos are like matzahs. Performed at the higher level with zeal and alacrity, they are transcendent. Performed sluggishly, slowly, they sour. God took us out of Egypt so quickly, one more moment we would not have gotten out, is to teach us that the way God wants us to view mitzvos is with that same speed. Because if you let things sit around, they lose quality than if you would do it quickly. And may I add, oftentimes, if we don't do it immediately, not only do we lose the spiritual quality, sometimes we lose the mitzvah as well. It just flies by us if we don't grab it right then and there. God took us out, Keheref Ayin, very quickly to show us this concept of time. Matzah and chametz, and our strictness not to have any form of chametz in our house, teaches us the same lesson that we need to move quickly. There's a third element in this parsha which demonstrates the same idea, which I'd like to focus in for a few minutes. The way we ate this quick bread on the night that God took us out so quickly reflects the same idea. The Torah tells us, it's brought in Daf Chochma Musar in Source 21, that the Torah tells us, V'achaltem oto b'chi pazon, they ate the matzah b'chi pazon in haste. Their shoes were on their feet, their belt was on their waist, their staff was in their hand, they were ready to go. It's like someone's going to pick you up for a wedding, so when they get there you say, oh, I have to find my shoes, I have to find my pocketbook, let me just... That's not the way they went out. They were ready, standing by the door when the honk of the horn was there, and they were out the door. The example that's often given is the difference between a car and a train. A car will wait for you, a train will not. The door's open, you want to get on, great. You missed it? Goodbye, good luck, you'll have to wait for the next train. V'achaltem oto b'chipazon is within this haste. So the Medrash says, what was this haste all about? So says the Medrash, v'chipazon shchina, the haste that we were manifesting down here was a reflection of the haste of God who was skipping over the mountains, this concept of Pesach, Passover, moving very quickly. So just like God was moving very quickly that night, we, in our physical embodiment of the spiritual, also ate it with haste. Which explains Rabbi Rucham in Das Chochma Musar, is really teaching us something much deeper. Doing mitzvos means running after God. We do mitzvos quickly because all mitzvos are like the mitzvah of Pesach, that you have to grab the moment quickly and run after God, otherwise it's lost. And that's how he explains the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which is found in Source 24. Rabbi Tarfon says the day is short, the task is abundant, the laborers are lazy, the wage is great, and the master of the house is insistent. We normally view this last part, and the master of the house is insistent, ubal habayit ocheg, like it's almost as God has one in his hand, a club or a whip in hand, move, move, move. But it really means, says Rabbi Yerucham, the following: ubal habayit ocheg means God doesn't have time to wait around. You need to accomplish things in life. Since God is constantly in movement, which is this concept of spirituality, the concept of grabbing the moment, of seizing the moment, that's why you don't have time to take your time. That's why the day is short, the task is abundant, that what it means that the master of the house is insistent, it means that he's constantly in movement, and we need to also be in movement. The final idea, he explains, is that, it's a very beautiful idea, is that every time a mitzvah comes our way, It says, if a ha'ara, a light from heaven, a godly force, comes with that mitzvah. So someone calls you up and says, can you have people over for Shabbos lunch? At that moment, there's a godly force resting over your telephone. And if you answer, yes, I'd love to have these people, you've grabbed that godly force, and you've jumped along with him to grab the moment. If you say, well, let me see, not necessarily this week, not only have you lost the mitzvah, you've lost that ability to grab the godliness that's with the mitzvah. God comes with mitzvahs. You have the ability to bring God within you, the ability to touch this level of spirituality if you grab the moment, if you get on the train. If not, you may get on the next train, you may reach the same station, but it's not the station, not the original train with God on it. I think there's a deeper level, though. We've been speaking about, till now, where to really actualize ourselves, we need to grab the moment when it's presented in front of us, to not wait and do things, but to do things immediately with quickness, and to be able to grab the godliness. I think there's a deeper level. There's a very poignant story told about Reb Aryeh Levin, famous book, A Tzaddik in Our Times, famous tzaddik of Yerushalayim. So the story is told, further Rabbi Krohn's book, of how in 1945 there were bombings going on in the Old City. And there's a certain rabbi who found out that a student of his was badly injured. So the rabbi felt that it was his duty to visit his student in the hospital. So even though it was very dangerous to move around with all the bombings, he nevertheless made his way through the streets to the hospital. And as he was entering the hospital, he noticed Rabbi Aryeh Levin and another man were also entering the hospital. And as he was looking for this student, and unfortunately there were many people who already were killed in the hospital, it was really a devastating scene, he noticed that Rabbi Aryeh was going over to the people no longer alive, taking off the sheet and telling this person, take a picture, take a picture. And the rabbi was saying to himself, this is such not respect for the people who died. And he said to Rabbi Aryeh, what are you doing? I mean, this really lacks any type of respect. The rabbi in his mind was thinking maybe Rabbi Aryeh wanted to send the pictures abroad so people should see. You know, referring to that today, people should see what was going on. So Rabbi Aryeh said to him, you don't understand. He said, I just found out that since these bombings are going on, there's really no time to individually bury each of these people. And they were just going to bury all of them together. He says, can you imagine the wives of all of these people who are not sure if their husbands had died or not, and that remain agunos, or remain chained, unable to get married? By taking pictures of these people, we can clearly identify who had died. This is a much deeper level of what Hitchatshus renewal is about. It's not just waiting for the moment to come and to grab it. It's anticipating the moment and grabbing the moment. You really want to run after God? You really want to have this experience? So don't just wait till that phone rings on Thursday night. Can you have these people? Already on Monday night, your phone should be calling. Who can I have for Shabbos? Who needs an invitation? What the concept of really, of hifchatshus, of renewal, of grabbing the time is that even before the time comes, anticipating that such a phone call will come, anticipating that something will be needed, and going ahead and doing it. And this idea is too found in the parsha. We know that the night of Pesach is called Leil Shimurim, the night of watching. So what was God watching? So here in Source 25, you have the beautiful Sforno once again who says that God was watching when would be the moment that the people would be redeemed, because Hashem is Chafetz Chesed, desires kindliness, desires goodness. God wanted to redeem the people. He was waiting for the opportunity to redeem them. It's not like God was sitting back and saying, okay, whenever the time comes, it comes, I'll redeem them. No. Leil Shimurim, the night of watching, means that God went out of his way sitting with anticipation. When is that moment going to come that I can redeem them? The example he gives is like a parent who's waiting, when will my child get married? And with this anticipation, I want it ready to celebrate my child's wedding. It's this waiting for something positive, something wonderful to happen. God, who is Chafetz Chesed, God who anticipates, who is filled with kindness, anticipates this goodness. That's how we have to act. We need, as emulating God, to be also, to be Leil Shimurim, anticipating with kindness how we can see something into fruition. just interesting to note that this reflects the second meaning of the name of Pesach. We normally understand Pesach as Passover, to skip over. The Targum Unklus, the Aramaic translation, explains Upasachti in source 29 as Ve'echos, to have mercy. There's two aspects of the Passover experience. One, God is running through town very fast. But why is He running through town so fast? Because He loves us and anticipates our time for redemption. There's one aspect of running after God and doing mitzvot. There's a second aspect of anticipating those mitzvot and running after God to do them. I think perhaps the imagery that comes to mind is the fifth chapter of Song of Songs we're familiar with, but it's worth repeating, where the woman is waiting for this rendezvous with her lover, and she's waiting and waiting, and one night she's already in her nightgown, ready, all washed, ready to go to sleep, and there's a knock on the door, and it's her lover. And she says, "Who is it?" He says, "It's me, open the door." And she says, "Oh, I just got into my nightgown. You want me to get up and open the door?" And he knocks again. And she says, "Who is it?" "It's your lover." "Oh, but I just got all washed up. I'm going to dirty my feet." And knocked again. And by the time she gets to the door, what happened? Dodi chamak avar. He's left. He's gone. And I think this, in a nutshell, really reflects our relationship with God within mitzvah. If you love somebody, if you're waiting for this rendezvous, so I don't care if you just got in your nightgown or you don't want to soil your feet, you're going to jump out of bed and you're going to run to open the door. But if you don't have this idea of zeal, of alacrity, of movement, of desiring to run after God, "Oh, I'm tired. Not tonight." And by the time you open the door, what happens? Dodi chamak avar. He's long gone, and we've missed the experience. If it makes us feel any better, the Ramchal, Mesilas Yesharim, says we need to understand, and this he says in 31, that a person's nature exercises a strong downward pull upon him. This is so because the grossness which characterizes the substance of earthiness keeps a man from desiring exertion and labor. One who wishes, therefore, to attain to the service of the Creator, may his name be blessed, must strengthen himself against his nature and be zealous. Person is called Adam from Adama, from the ground. We have a natural gravitational pull to earthiness, to the ground. I know particularly my high school students, you ask them, vacation's coming up this week and next week, what would you like to do? So 9 times out of 10, what will they respond? Sleep. Nothing. This is hang out. Why? Because that's a natural gravitational pull. That's what life is about. Let me just be pulled downward. I'll sleep late, I'll hang around the house, whatever it may be. Because we have that natural pull, we don't have that desire to jump out of bed and to open the door. When those knocks on the door come, when we have the opportunity of mitzvot, we don't jump to them. "Oh, we'll take our time, we'll get it done, whenever it will happen." That's something we need to be aware of and we need to work against. And that's why, says the Sifti Chaim in source 32, we have this concept that on Pesach, you cannot have any chametz whatsoever in the house, not even hidden anywhere, not even a little bit. Because chametz represents this idea of atzlus, of laziness. Even a little bit of laziness will pull a person a very long way. And that's why, to get very much rooted on the ground into the practical, Rabbi Tatz says in Living Inspired, we must live on the plane 33 of Chiddush of newness. We must never expand into the natural. The first law in the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, concerns the beginning of the day. The first obligation of the day. The Shulchan Aruch begins with the first law is a halachic obligation to get out of bed in the morning. So understood superficially, this is good advice. But there's much more than that here. What is intended is a basic lesson in beginnings. If one is as strong as a lion to arise in the morning, if one begins the day with no laziness, not allowing the sluggishness of natural human inertia to contaminate the moment of waking. It's called the snooze button on our radios. We all know it well. A first consciousness, then the day can be spiritual, then the day can be elevated. Everything goes after the beginning. Pure beginnings, beginnings beyond time, cannot possibly provide a foothold for the negativity of staleness and depression. There's no negativity in the moment of new creation. while the energy of creativity is flowing, depression and despair are impossible. The spiritual root of depression is lack of growth in the personality. When time ticks away and nothing new is being built, when all is static, then the neshama feels the cold hand of death. And that's why he notes in 36, this is a great secret in the understanding of depression. And this is the reason that the cure for depression is activity. At first, any purposeful activity, but leading as soon as possible to activity of the neshama, the movement of growth. So to summarize what we've seen today, our original question was, why was this mitzvah chosen as the first mitzvah? And I think now we have a clear understanding on two levels of why indeed it was chosen. On the first level, it's marking us as freedom, as a nation, that we have the ability to control time, which a slave does not have. On the second level, it's a call for us to renew ourselves. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, it will be for you. We need every month, we need within the month, to renew ourselves and to live a life of renewal. How? And the answer is the ability to use time. The concept of newness is if you're able to use time well and not allow time to just flitter by. As Rabbi Tatz, this section we just read, when it ticks away and nothing new is being built, when all is static, that's really the concept, the opposite of newness, the concept of death. And the parsha, I think, in the way the parsha describes the revelation of God and the exodus of Egypt, really delineates for us this concept. God took us out so quickly. Our beginning as the people had to be above time. It had to be the spiritual aspect, not slowly physical. It had to be minimizing time as much as possible. Chametz matzah represent this, the difference of time. And this idea of b'chipazon, eating it quickly, we don't have time. God is skipping around. God doesn't have time. God comes down when a mitzvah appears to us. We grab it, we grab the opportunity of spirituality. We don't grab it, we may have the mitzvah, but we've lost this aspect of the newness, the spirituality, the catching of God, allowing God to reside within us, that aspect of the mitzvah. And finally, the last aspect has to be the aspect of anticipating these events, looking for ways, like God was looking for Leil Shimurim, the night of watching, for ways to be chafetz chesed, to bring this ability of alacrity within our lives, to find events to bring godliness within our lives. And the greatest way to start is to get up in the morning. If we jump out of bed, so that we're saying to ourselves is, I want to begin with newness. I want to overcome time. I'm not going to allow time to overcome me. And I think in conclusion, that's what was the Hava Mina, the thought of Rabbi Yitzchak at the beginning of the first Rashi. What Rabbi Yitzchak was saying is, what do we focus in on? Should the Torah begin with the creation of the world, the creation of time? Or should the Torah begin with the Jewish people creating time and the Jewish people creating themselves? They are both parallel stories, creation of time and creation of self. So that was Rabbi Yitzchak's question. Are we focusing in on a universal or a particularistic aspect of time? Torah clearly has chosen the universal, and in order for us to appreciate the particular, we look at time in general, and then we are handed that freedom, that calendar, and we're told, sanctify yourselves, make something of yourselves. Do not allow time to get the better of you, but you get the better of time.